G'day, Groovers. Welcome to another episode of The U Project. I'm Craig Anthony Harfer, and that is Tiff. What's your middle name?
Anne.
Tiffany Anne. Is it Tiffany or just, it's Tiffany, of course.
Yes.
Tiffany with a double E, Tiffany Anne Cook with no E on the end.
Nailed it.
What was mum, what were mum and dad thinking with the double E on Tiffany?
You know, I used to think the same thing, but then when I got to register the business name Tiffany & Co. and not get sued, I was happy with it.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying it's bad. It's good. I like
it. But now she's got a dog. She's got a toy poodle now, and that's called Tilly, and that's got two E's too.
Well, she's got something about two E's. She's unique. Now, you've had her before we introduce our guest who's going to edumacate me, and I'm super interested because most times when I talk to somebody, I have a reasonably good handle on what they do and how they do it, and I feel like, you know, I've got a fair bit to add to this conversation today. I'm like Humphrey Bear today. I know fucking nothing. So we'll get to Bastion in a moment. But when you and I just connected 5 or 10 minutes ago, you looked a bit emotional and you said, you're the first person I've spoken to today that I haven't started crying with. What is going? And for those who are just joining us and going, where's Melissa? Well, Melissa's having some time off. She's still working, of course. She's still running my life and running the show. But Tiff is our new producer and our new co-host. And so she's doing one or two eps a week. Melissa's doing two or three or however we roll. But in case you've missed Tiff, she's our new team member and she's a gun. But she's a bit emotional today. What's going on?
Oh, Craig. So yesterday when I woke up and I got out of bed, I couldn't bear weight on my left foot. Mm. I'm getting around on crutches and now it's swollen up and I'm extremely emotional and I'm in a lot of pain.
And you literally can't even stand on that foot, can you?
Can't stand on that foot. I can't even sit the foot on the ground to rest it.
Ouch. And you know what's sore. What's interesting about that is you are a bit of an OG, like you're hardcore. You're a bit of a gangster. You punch people in the face and get, but you've done that. You've won boxing titles. You're not soft. You're not precious. You're definitely not a fucking princess. You're 30% boy, let's be honest. And so for you to go, I'm in pain and I'm crying, it must be significant. So you went and had an X-ray and it gave you donuts.
Yep.
And did you say you're getting an ultrasound today or you've had one?
I had an ultrasound and there's possible, but I'll need to get an MRI, but there's possible fracture or stress fracture of the cuboid bone.
Yeah.
It seems
like a disproportionate level of pain for a maybe fracture though, right? Like, yes. Because you're in agony.
I'm in agony. I'm going to go to the doctor after this and I'm also going to get a test for gout, because a few people have thrown that term around. Now, it's not in the same place as you normally get gout, but Dr. Google says.
Well, Dr.
And I'm
Google,
one of those people that when there's an illness or there's a thing or there's an injury, I'm the 1%. I'm like the 1% that gets the really weird version of it. Good like that.
And so is there anything that you can take? Like, have you taken any, I'm not suggesting this, folks, have you taken any anti-inflams?
I did take some this morning, but I'm just taking painkillers, which don't really do anything. I think I just take them so that I mentally tick a list and think they might do something.
Yeah.
But I'm hopping around. My right glute is on fire because I'm hopping everywhere and I'm tired. It's really tiring to live your life on one leg. And then when I hop, so I feel like I'm going to get a stress fracture in my right foot from hopping everywhere. Mm. And I'm just tired.
You're going to have a massive right ass cheek and a massive right quad, and you're going to have this skinny little left thing, and you're going to veer right. We're going to have to send you to Bob Jane T-Mart for a bloody alignment, because you're just going to pull in one direction, and if unless you've got your sat nav on, you're just going to go in circles. All right, let's introduce today's guest, who's just nodding off with our boring diatribe, Bastion Treptle. Am I saying that right, Tiff? Treptle?
Yep, sure. Have I been saying it right for all these years, Bastion?
Thank God. Was just 14 years old when he started hacking into accountants and stealing money, the cheeky little fucker. But since turning his life around, the former professional scammer is using his knowledge to prevent everyday Aussies from becoming prey to hackers. Also, Bastion is the co-founder of CTRL Group, Australia's progressive information security firm, protecting businesses from cyber risk CTRL Group offers best-in-class security solutions ranging from audits, hacking, monitoring, advisory, and education. G'day, mate. How are you?
Yeah, fantastic, Craig. And lovely to see you again, Tiff.
Good to see you too, buddy.
Thanks for coming to have a chat to us, mate. I'm literally a student. I'm putty in your hands. And you know what scared me a little bit, Tiff? I did, as I do, because, you know, I'm a researcher. I did a little bit of, and when I say research, I mean 4 minutes because I've got other shit to do. But I thought, you know what I thought? I don't want to do too much because I want to learn. But anyway, so I jumped onto something to just get a little bit of a bio and a bit of a snapshot. And it says, Bastian Treptel wants to know your location. And I went, of course he does. I went, fuck, help. I went, he hasn't stopped. So, mate, firstly, for we have a lot of listeners where we have a real spectrum from teenagers to 70-year-olds and people who, like you, are at the end of the spectrum in terms of 10 out of 10 in terms of understanding and optimizing tech, and probably Tiff, who's a six, and then myself, who's a one, right? Or a zero. So just explain to us what a hacker is.
Well, hacking is a really mis sort of understood term.
Yeah.
A hacker is anyone who takes some kind of thing like a phone or a system and transforms what it was originally intended to do into something else. That could be, you know, something is like hacking your blind so they open up in the morning is a really useful term of hacking. And maybe not such a good term would be, you know, someone when I was a bit younger breaking into some organizations and getting some credit card numbers and using them to order pizza and things like that. That's a bad form of hacking. So, yeah, look, it's usually a good thing to try and take something and make it better by hacking it. But hackers these days, they've changed. Like the evil hackers are getting pretty serious these days and threatening our society as we know it, which is pretty sad.
Well, there's a space that lives between your world and my world, and you definitely would have heard of this, and it's called biohacking.
Absolutely. I love biohacking. I'm waiting to get the implant in my wrist. Like, come on.
Yeah. So biohacking, folks, essentially means that is trying to figure out better ways to optimize and manage health and improve health and longevity and function and all of those things. And so if you want to go down, as well as going down this rabbit hole with Bastian and Tiff and I, but if you want to go down another rabbit hole and you're a health nut, for want of a better term, just Google biohacking or YouTube biohacking, and you'll come out 3 days later, probably more confused than you went in.
But maybe yeah, stay away from the Japanese biohacking sites, just a hot tip, unless you want to get real deep.
What's going on there?
Oh, look, lots of mutilation of our naughty bits.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a horrible thing where Japanese fishermen insert little, I think it might be pearls, into their male bits. Yeah. And they get infections more often than not, and often they end up losing their appendages, which, maybe avoid that kind of biohacking.
Yeah, look, as a rule, my rule is don't put stuff in your dick. I'm no doctor, anyone. Feel free to make your own choices, but look, if you've got a cock, probably don't put anything up it. Look, just a, you know, Craig 101 rule. Not medical advice, not a prescription. As I said, it's not clinical, but just my thoughts. So, mate, when was the first time you did something a bit shifty and dodgy, and how did it happen, and how did you learn about computers, and why the fuck weren't you just playing games and killing dragons like normal kids?
Well, I guess if you asked my mum that would be a very different answer. I was just really curious about everything. And I remember my parents had this amazing antique telescope, and I just had to know how it worked. How did I look through one end and I could see the moon and its craters? It was really interesting. And so I took it to pieces and didn't quite put it back together properly. And they were very upset with me. And I don't think to this day that poor thing has actually been rectified back to its future. Sorry, its past glory. So that was, I guess, my start. And then someone gave me a computer. I remember my grandfather flew it down to me. And it was just an extension of that, finding out how the internet worked. Some poor guy who worked at a bank, which we can't talk about, took his laptop home one day. This is probably my most nefarious thing. And I got access to his laptop. Then he took his laptop back into the bank. And then that gave me access to the bank. And then I had some credit card numbers. And yeah, look, I ordered pizza was about the worst thing I ever did, but it opened my eyes up to how easy it was to break into these systems and get access to things you shouldn't really have access to. And from then it was more just a curiosity game. How far could I go? What could I get? I never really did anything that malicious, but I definitely got into a few systems and some I still can't talk about to this day.
And so did you do, was this you kind of being the covert Robinson Crusoe on your own little tech island doing it by yourself, or did you have a bunch of mates where you're like, hey, fucking come over here, check this out? Like, did you work as a bit of a cyber gang, or was it just you?
I've never heard that analogy, but that is so good, the Robinson Crusoe one. I idolized that guy. I mean, he had running water at the top of a tree. What a legend.
Exactly. Well, I'm calling you the Robinson Crusoe of cyberspace. Cyber.
I'll happily take that.
Yeah. So was it just you, or did you, like, I'm thinking, do you learn about this? And we're not endorsing or supporting this kind of activity, ladies and gentlemen, but do you learn about this shit solo, or are there groups where you talk about this stuff? Is there literature? Is there a dark? I know there's a dark web now. You need to tell me what that is, because I've just heard. I don't fucking know. I could fall over the dark web. I wouldn't know what. I could wind up in the dark web. I wouldn't know I'm there. But how did you learn all this stuff?
Yeah, it was just curiosity. I mean, back in the day, there were never any sort of physical friends that I had, but there were definitely lots of pieces of information out there. You could learn to code. You could learn to do all sorts of interesting things. And back then it was probably more about learning to search the internet, because that was a skill. Everyone's got this skill now of being able to search the internet, but back then it was a lot harder. So trying to team up with groups and people on forum boards was a big thing. And they would tell you to go and look at these sites or these pieces of information, and you just learn and learn and learn, and you'd grow your craft over time. But yeah, always by myself. I just loved it. Let's say, somewhat challenging upbringing. I was a normal kid, but I had some interesting things happen to me. And for me, just being exposed to the internet was such an amazing thing. And having people that would, you know, talk to you and give you advice and teach you for no other reason, it seemed, than to passing on knowledge, which was amazing back then and still is today.
It seems like a common denominator, kids who perhaps weren't in an environment, and you don't need to share anything specifically, but maybe where they had great connection or love or support or an awesome family existence or whatever, but where there's some kind of, you know, there's this other place in inverted commas that you can go and meet people and be connected and, you know, find like a bit of purpose or a little bit of excitement or fun. That's a really common thing.
Yeah, sorry for that background noise. Yeah, it really is. And I think that's even more common today, that kids are going out to the internet and they're exposing themselves to all manner of potentially nasty things because there is that bond out there. And I mean, look at COVID. We have essentially existed over the last 15 weeks without really going outside and getting to know each other online via meetings like Zoom and Messenger and tapping away. And you can actually form quite a good bond then. I think you're right. You've hit the nail on the head there, that once you find a group of people, or like-minded people that are set on a goal of maybe breaking into something or discovering something or changing something, then that can be quite powerful.
You know, one of the funny things is that people often say to me, oh yeah, but they're not real relationships. Well, depending on what we're talking about, if we're talking about Facebook friends, no, they're not real friends for the most part. But even like this now, where I'm, who knows if you and I will ever meet in person, hopefully we do one day and have a coffee or whatever, but I still get to meet you and I still get to see you and I still get to learn about you and connect and interact with you in a way that just wasn't possible. In fact, for most of mankind and humanity, like stuff like this was ridiculous. I remember saying to somebody the other day, when I first went to my first trip to America was in Tiff, you might have just been born, Tiff, 1985. When were you born?
1983.
Okay, so you were just pooing in your pants at the time. probably. And I remember I rang home. I can't even remember who or why, but I rang home a couple of times, Bastion, in 1985, and it cost me back then, 35 years ago, $6 a minute to talk on the phone, right? And it's a shit line and you're from a hotel and it's crazy. And now, you know, we interviewed people all around the world in real time with amazing video and amazing audio, and it's not perfect, but it's close to perfect. It's pretty amazing, and it's free. Like I definitely think that the advancements with tech outweigh the negatives, and I think the only real, I would think overall they definitely outweigh the negatives. That's just my opinion. I don't know what you two think, but also a lot of the bullshit and the problems are not so much the technology, but how human beings use the technology, obviously.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's probably not as free as you realize, and we can get into that later. But yeah, absolutely. I was talking to my parents about this the other day. I moved to Australia in 1985, and you know, we had the big phone bill that luckily the grandparents pretty much footed, I believe, at that stage, according to my mum. But yeah, I remember we used to like fantasize about being able to video chat with each other, and it was this concept in the future. And you talk about, you know, some people saying it not being real, but it probably doesn't get any more real than bullying that we're seeing online and people taking their own lives. It's that real to them that they're committing suicide over it.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. And all of this, and even the stuff on, Twitter. I know I'm on Twitter, but I never go to Twitter. Like, I have a Twitter account, but I wouldn't even know how to use it. Do you, and I mean, I know you're not a therapist, and I know that's not your area, but you're in the space. Have you seen lots of people who have been really, apart from just financially and commercially damaged, but also emotionally and psychologically damaged through what goes on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a whole industry targeting single men and women to try and extort them for money, for emotional gain. And you know, some pretty clever people that I know have been extorted financially and emotionally left distraught to the point of they feel like they've lost a relationship, even after they know they've been scammed, still miss said person because of the amount of psychology and effort that goes into understanding humans and where our weak points are. And yeah, it's tragic. We talk about those groups that we were saying before, like, where do you learn to do these things? Is a group. There are groups out there that will teach you how to be an effective scammer and get money out of Australians or a whole number of English speaking countries.
Yeah. It's amazing. And so if your bio is right, how old are you? You must be about 40.
Hey, I'm holding on to 39 very tightly for a few more weeks.
He's just fucking with his fingernails. He's holding on to 39. And yeah. So if my extensive research is right, which of course it is, because it's exhaustive, the work I do before every show. So you had the feds knock on your door when you were 15-ish or 16-ish. And because you'd hacked into a major Australian bank, hang on, accessing 40,000 credit card numbers.
Yeah, well, luckily I didn't do anything with those credit card numbers, because we recently had Stephen Skeeve on our podcast, Cyberhacker. And the only thing he did differently to me was he actually published some of those credit cards, and that landed him in jail. He was the first Australian to ever go to jail. So, yeah, I mean, I was cutting it pretty fine. But yeah, look, I didn't do anything other than order a pizza to see if the credit cards worked. To me, it seemed so amazing that these numbers could be used to order food. And I was a pretty hungry kid doing a lot of swimming back then. I got to a state level of swimming, so food was pretty high on my priorities list. Mm. That's about all I ever did with it.
And you went, hey, this is just a practical resource and I'm being creative. Get off my back, everybody. When did you have for want of a better term, a come to Jesus moment? Was it after the cops knocked on your door, or did you have some kind of moment where you went, maybe I'll use my powers for good, not evil?
I remember ripping the power cord out of my computer a few times. But yeah, absolutely. It was probably more a family acquaintance that I saw get scammed out of their money. It was probably one of the first scams that had really happened in Australia. And yeah, they'd done all the right things and got insurances and whatnot. And by the time the insurance company had paid out, they couldn't afford to continue paying wages and things like that. Their accounts had been stripped. And yeah, just understanding how that scam happened. And it was actually very similar to modern scams. It was phone-based. There was a lot of trust and relationship building going on with a little bit of technology mixed in there.
Sorry, mate. And you said before that, you know, it might, some of the things that we use, they might seem free, but they're kind of free, but not really. Unpack that a little bit for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you let's talk about, say, I don't know, Messenger, which appears to be a free communication service, the amount of data that they're collecting on you to then sell you ads, to then basically use your identity against you. So if you look at the ads component of it, this was covered really well on a movie I recommend everyone watch, which is Social Dilemma. Yeah, they're essentially gathering as much information that they can to you to then sell you certain products. So then they'll have a profile, and the profile of you has become so accurate that those profiles can then be used even to be weaponized against you. So things like how you vote, things like where you spend your money, things like where you are right now, what your location is, what your stands are, your beliefs, apart from just being sold things we don't need, which everyone falls for. You know, you've heard some horrific stories of, you know, whole communities that have been taken advantage of, and horrible things like people believed they were protesting, for example, by not voting. And that whole thing was their data being used against them. They knew they were somewhat activist style people. They knew they were prone to protesting. Hey, we're going to protest by not voting. Well, guess whose candidate got in? I mean, I hate, you know, to think of the leadership of that team, because it feels like it doesn't take that much of a mental leap to realize that not voting is probably depowering you rather than empowering you. But yeah, those are the things that the data can be used for against you. And there's lots of horrible things. I've seen people with like their identities stolen, and credit cards have been taken out in their names, and things being bought, and it takes them years to get their identity back. It takes them years to get their credit score back up. And there's not enough processes within our own governments to help people out with these things. There's some great organizations like ID Care, for example, that'll actually help you go through that process free of charge, but it's a horrible thing to go through. And yeah, people just jump on Messenger, whack in email address, whack in your username and password. A lot of the time that username and password's the same as every other site that you use, which is also a very bad thing, by the way, and then think it's free, but you're just giving so much information about yourself, who you're calling, what device you're using when you're calling, what location you are calling from, what times of day do you call. All these things can give you like snippets. If you think of it as a Sudoku puzzle of who you are, they can tell whether you're single, whether you've been faithful, what religious beliefs you have, all sorts of things based on your online habits. Yeah. So yeah, it's not quite free.
I'm being an idiot back here. Hey, I was going to say, I listened to Rogan, as every second person I know does, Joe Rogan, and he talks a lot about, you know, this stuff, and he gets on some, like, he's had Snowden on, and he's had a bunch of cool people on. Do you listen to Rogan periodically, I'm sure?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so who wouldn't? And he was talking to this dude recently, I forget who, and he was basically saying, or the guy was saying, might have been Snowden, might have been someone else, that the interwebs, the bots, the whatever, know that, for example, that you might be, you're an environmentalist, for example. So you're all about Mother Earth and taking care of the planet, and you're on the global warming bandwagon, and you're really passionate in that space, that they will put shit on your timeline that's the opposite, so that you will go to war with these people and stay on, so you will stay on their platform for longer. Is that true?
There are so many social manipulations that go on. And I mean, I haven't heard of that one. I've heard of the echo chamber ones. I've heard of definitely motivating people to go and do things based on what they put on your feed. Yeah, it's pretty horrific. I mean, for some fairly cheap money, you can go and influence a whole bunch of people, and that could be a strategy that you use. Go and post, so you can say to Facebook, I want to find out people who are environmentally responsible, who are interested, and you could pick out a whole heap of different sort of data points that would kind of get the right person for you, the person that you want to motivate to do something.
Yeah.
And you could go as horrific as trying to motivate some people to assassinate presidents, or, you know, whatever your target might be. If you hit enough people, yeah, one of those people are going to do what you want them to do. And you're starting to manipulate people. You're starting to manipulate political opinion, religious affiliations. It's it's scary what is possible.
Bastian, what was the name of that you said for, was it ID care where people can get,
yeah.
Just give us a quick, so for people who are going, fuck, how do I, because right now, everybody's sphincter listening to this is just snapshot and everybody wants to know, how do I, what can I do or who can I talk to? Not everybody, but there's probably a few going, all right, well, that's good. Now I'm scared. What can I do about it? So what can we do about it?
Yeah, if you think that your personal identity is being stolen or used for crime or you just want some general information, go to ID Care. There are a bunch of people that will help you. They'll give you some education on steps to take to protect your identity. If your identity has already been taken, then I'm really sorry for you because it's a horrible thing to go down. But they'll take you through the steps. If you're a business, then a bit of a self-plug here, get in contact with someone like us at CHRL Group and we'll take you down those steps. But I mean, unfortunately, Australians are just so trusting. And I mean, I've told this story to Tiff before, but we went to Southeast Asia. We run these little scam companies that are there. The intention is for them to be scammed. And we got scammed and we met this one particular friendly scammer and he invited us over to check out his operation. You know, 4-story building, 180 staff, HR managers, sick leave, predominantly female call center, university educated psychologists helping them deploy scripts that would be effective against Australians. That's what you're up against.
So there's whole organizations structured like legit companies with all the moving parts of a normal company that are all about, like literally about ripping humans off.
Yeah, and this particular one targeted at Australia because they believe we were wealthy, an easy target and very trusting and had generally poor cyber hygiene, which is true.
That's unbelievable. Now I'm very nervous, Tiff. Now I'm definitely...
I was going to tell you that by the end of this, you might just throw your computer and your phone over the bamboo.
Now everybody's told me, I haven't watched the is it called The Social Dilemma?
Yeah, that's it.
Have you watched it, Tiff?
No, I haven't.
I want to watch it, but I'm scared to watch it.
Watch it, please. It's the old ostrich technique's not going to work that well with cybersecurity.
It's done pretty well so far for me. No, you're right. All right, I'm going to watch it. I might watch it tonight. I've got another podcast tonight at 7.
It's a powerful movie because it's some of the younger generation now are literally turning their phones off after watching this.
Really?
Which is a good thing. Probably all need to disconnect a little.
So you started in 94-ish, you know, having a fascination with computers and opening the tech door and on all the bits and pieces. And now it's 2021 almost. What are some of the most amazing things that you've seen in terms of evolution, good and bad? So you've been in this space for a quarter of a century. Fuck, that's a long time, isn't it? So you've been in this space for a quarter of a century, involved and watching and observing and learning and now teaching and protecting and empowering people to look after their own shit and protect their own shit. So what's some of the stuff that you've seen over that time, both good and bad, which is kind of stands out for you?
I mean, technology back in the day, it was such an effort to get it to do what you wanted to do. These days with visual coding, with machine learning, with artificial intelligence, there are so many amazing things happening that we didn't think would be possible years and years ago. And now they're all coming to fruition and they're coming to fruition really quickly. That's been amazing. The downside of that is how easy it is to now use that tech for bad. So I'll give you an example, you know, way back when I was playing around, you'd find one IP address with a vulnerability that was interesting to you and you might spend a few days or weeks looking at it. Now you can write scripts that'll do 50,000 IP addresses or 20,000 businesses. And we saw that recently with Scott Morrison getting up and saying there's this targeted attack from China. That's what we're talking about, which is frightening. And even to the point now where technology is getting so good, we can synthesize humans. This one's a really interesting one. If you've heard of deep fakes, you'd be a prime candidate for this, Craig. So you've got all this footage and voice of you online. Within sort of 3 or 4 minutes, I can use some really powerful graphics processing cards and CUDA chips. They're called CUDA cores, I should say. to synthesize your voice and tell whoever you've got working in accounts payable that there's this great guy, Bastion. He's just done such a good job on this podcast that I want to give him 10 grand. And here's his bank account number. Just transfer it right now. Now, it sounds like you, whoever's your accounts payable person, he or she, has then received an email from you, and it looks legit as well, saying, hey, just backing up that last convo we had with this email so you don't get a typo on the account number, which is, I don't know, maybe a clever way of breaching it. And most people will go and transfer that money happily into my bank account. So you can see how easily, you know, technology can be used for good and bad. That's probably some of the most horrific things. Some of the better things is how much that technology is now being used to help protect and even detect things like deep fakes. So there's some scary stuff coming up. But yeah, I mean, we've seen a 50% increase in hacks since COVID started. So there's lots of bad stuff going on, but also lots of good stuff going on too.
So what Bastion's saying, everyone, is if a video comes out in the near future of me in a spa with some other people, it's not real. So if perchance that surfaces soon, that video of me in the spa, not real. Just saying, it's been produced. So tell me what your company does. So is it, do I just say CTRL or do we, I don't know. Is it just the
CTRL
acronym?
Group. Yeah, that's
CTRL group. So what do you guys do?
We've spent years trying to figure out how to protect people, and it's not that easy a thing to figure out. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, social engineering attacks, when you're talking about technological attacks, when you're talking about people driving around in cars with IP addresses, cyber is a really big topic and it's hard to know. So we've come at it with a bit of a three-pronged approach. We spend a lot of time trying to understand what the threats out there. So over the last 24 months, what has actually happened in the world? What companies have been successfully breached? You know, there are so many, like MyGov has just been breached and all those records are now available on the dark web. How did we help the government not have that happened? If anyone was unfortunate enough not to opt out of my health records, then all your data is already on the dark web. Like, how do we stop those things from happening? So we've studied a lot about what the threats are, what controls, and controls are things that stop bad things from happening. And then we go and assess organizations and say, well, what you've got in place is a good start, fantastic, but you're liable for these breaches. And in your industry, these breaches have happened so many times. And we'd say you've got a pretty good chance of getting hit within the next 24 months if you don't do anything. And then our job is to go, yeah, mate.
Go on, sorry.
Our job is then to go and help them make sure the appropriate controls are in place. But most importantly, we've got some pretty amazing tech that will go and tell you, first of all, if there's a bad guy already in your system. And that's scary, right? Because you feel like your business is yours, your email systems are yours. But, you know, something like 40% of the time, 50% of the time now that we check, your email system's already infected. There's already a bad guy in your business listening to your communication, listening to your business, and then from there getting access into your file systems. So we've got some clever tech that'll tell you whether there's anyone in there already, and some even more clever tech that'll tell you if anyone's trying to get in there in the future. We call it, you know, a future indicator of compromise and current indicators of compromise. So we detect, we respond, and then if anything bad happens, we actually help organizations through that incident. So you can do it badly and you can do it well. The organizations that do it bad, sadly, one in six organizations that get hit, they won't be here in 12 months.
Wowza. Wowza. I feel like there's quite an analogy between kind of tech health and physical health in that. Tell me if this is a good comparison or if it rings true. Like with looking after our body and our health and our wellness and our fitness and our immune system and our performance on a physical level, a lot of people are reactive. They wait till shit breaks or something's wrong. They're not proactive. They're not preemptive. They wait till the wheels fall off and then they go, fuck, I better get in shape now because I just got diagnosed with 9 things.
You're trying to make me cry again, Craig?
Listen, fucking hop along.
I'm feeling hot. Highly targeted right now.
Listen one foot. Is it the same in the tech space? Are people a little bit reactive rather than, and they kind of go, well, we're good. We don't have any problems. And then all of a sudden the shit hits the fan and you get a call.
We have this problem. Absolutely. We call it the arrogant IT department that's telling the board, and rightly so, because they're being paid to tell them that they're doing a good job, that everything's in hand. We've got the greatest firewalls. We've got the greatest EDR, whatever it is. And yeah, unfortunately that message just isn't real. So Yeah, you have to go on and investigate cyber these days. You've got to go and have a look to see some of these poor people who've been hit, like really big brands that just aren't here anymore today because of cyber. And it's horrific. You know, all the horrible things that are getting out there, you know, it needs to be addressed now. Australia is seen as a weak target. There's some new stats from Oz Cyber. Yeah, I think that's now Oz Cyber. 1 in 3 Australians are involved in a cyber breach now.
Wow. Have you ever had anyone try and bribe you or send you emails going, if you don't do this or pay that, they're going to do whatever? Have you had any of that go on with you?
No, but I've had a lot of Nigerian princes offer me money.
A lot of those guys. Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, well, Nigerian prince would love you.
I'd love to use this podcast to let everyone's mind rest a little bit. There's one particular breach getting around, or just a social engineering scam, and it hits a lot of elderly people and it hits a lot of people in the community. And that's where you'll receive this email and it'll say, hey, we know that you've been looking up adult material online and we've used your webcam to get pictures and videos of you doing whatever people do when they watch those things. And if you don't give us some money right now, we're going to leak those photos tomorrow. And they'll often have part of your password in that email. Now, there's 2 billion password combinations, email and password combinations available online. So what these hackers are doing is they're getting those lists and then they're making it look real because they have your password in that email, even though your password's already been breached. And a lot of people are sending money. So I want to let everyone know that that is a fake thing. They don't have pictures of you doing whatever you did, but you do need to go and find out whether that password has been breached, and it has if it's in that email, and then go and change all your passwords. But yeah, it's a really horrific one that's hit a lot of elderly gentlemen and women and things like that. That yeah, and they ring us up and they ring people like ID Care in a bit of a tiz. But yeah, you can, if you listen to this and you refer to your 70-year-old listeners before, Craig, you can relax a little bit on that one.
Well, that's a relief. I shouldn't have sent all that Bitcoin. That was a waste, wasn't it? Fucking hell. Yeah, I've had a few of those and I just went, well, 1, don't watch it. 2, don't jack off in front of a computer. And 3, I don't have a camera, not on my main computer anyway. And I was going to write back and go for it. But then someone told me, don't write back to them because you'll open some door. And I went, oh, okay.
Yeah, don't open Pandora's box on that one. But yeah, good to know that you didn't reply.
Yeah, no, I didn't. One of my feel free to go wherever you want, mate, but one of my, I guess, revelations this year has been I've never done, I've worked in radio a lot and, you know, we're up to, I think this is, what is this? What did we say? TIFF 305, episode 305 of the U Project. But you know, the vast majority of them have been in this studio that you can see, but the ease of execution of you not having to leave wherever you are to drive over here to get a park to, or for Tiff or Melissa who does the other producing to come over here, it's made a lot of things easy and more, in many ways more efficient, because it's a lot more time efficient, you know. So there's definitely been, obviously, the virus itself and of course there are terrible consequences, but there's been, I think, in the middle of all of the pain, there's been lots of people adapting and figuring out how they can perhaps maximize things from a tech point of view.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's been a good thing, as you said, you know, making everything easier. But unfortunately, it's been a bad thing. Like everyone working from home, all these IT departments and businesses had to mobilize their workforce out into the field. And that's just made an absolute sort of perfect scenario for all these hackers. Some of the stats that have come out of a company, Verizon, they do this data breach report each year. 55% of cybercrime is now done by organized crime. So your bikie gangs that used to go and break into your houses and sell drugs and all those sorts of things, they've largely shifted their operation to be cyber now. Even like really horrific things, like you talk about the ease of information these days. I know that you're in a studio. I don't know if that studio is at your home or wherever it might be, but we could say that when you're broadcasting in one area, then that information can be sold to common thieves to say, with all likelihood, these people aren't home at the moment and we're going to do traditional crime and steal the jewelry and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's the home workforce has been absolutely hammered with social engineering, phishing attacks, smishing attacks, which is a SMS-based attack. One really common one that people should look out for is, hey, we've got some deliveries on the way, and I get those legitimate texts all the time when I've ordered goods, but in there will also be some dodgy ones clicking on a link which will infect your phone and then let attackers know your location, your phone numbers, and your phone. And everything's in our phone these days. And once your phone is exposed, you can say that you've had a personal data breach. So yeah, it definitely makes things easier for us in our everyday lives and in business in particular, but it also makes things a lot easier for the hacker. So just be aware of what you're putting out there.
And I guess because tech is an ever shifting landscape, like it's always evolving, it's always changing, then you guys who are trying to protect people or help people protect themselves more correctly, like you're always having to learn and relearn and explore new stuff and develop new protocols around defense.
Yeah, it's the best and worst thing about our jobs in cyber. Constantly having to learn, constantly having to think of new attack vectors and understand what the bad guys are doing. Because, I mean, there's some pretty clever bad guys out there. And I like to say to organizations that use our services, you've got some of the smartest people in the world that are motivated by the most lucrative criminal systems in the world and financial reward working against your business. Now, do you want the guy that you hired for 20 grand less than the other guy and he now works in your IT department to be looking after your cybersecurity? Because you're pitting him against all these brilliant criminals.
That's so true, isn't it? And there's something to do with the level of motivation between the guy trying to steal your money and the guy who is paid to kind of protect the business, who goes home at 5 o'clock and gets paid the same each week, whether or not he or she is brilliant or not.
The other really important thing to hammer home here is cyber is actually not a technology problem. Like you touched on it before, it's, you know, neuro-linguistic, it's how the mind works, it's social engineering. And the IT guy doesn't have the toolkit to solve cyber. It has to be, you know, in our organization, psychologists, a 50-50 workforce of women and men, because women and men think very differently about how they would attack an organization. You've got to think, what are the threats out there? How do we stop them? How do we detect them? It's a really fun and often laborious thing to go through all the different steps to protect an organization. And sometimes the bad guys have the upper hand when some new tool comes out. And sometimes we get the upper hand for a few months, but it's constantly sort of a wavering scale, which is, yeah, like I said, the good and bad parts of our job.
All right. Can you take that out?
No way.
I think it's good to leave it in there if you're comfortable, Craig, because it really does open up that everyone does these types of things, and that's why this scam's so effective.
Oh, my goodness. All right, let's just keep rolling. It's just been pointed out to me. We had a little break there, folks. It's just been pointed out to me that Tiff suggested it sounded like I had a... Tiff, can you say it?
that your reference was... that your masturbation computer didn't have a camera on it, so it didn't matter.
Can I just point out that I don't have any computer that I do that in front of, and if it sounded like that, I apologise. Well, what I was saying was when that happened, which was a year or two ago, I didn't have my current computer. I only had a desktop which had no camera. So I knew... Well, apart from the fact that I don't do that, but when they're like, we've got videos of you doing whatever, I'm like, well, even if I did do that, which I don't, you couldn't have video of it. So, oh, is it hot in here? I want to get onto the next topic. So moving forward, mate, what's the next big thing? Because it seems, or what's the thing that we need to think about moving forward? Because it feels like tech and security in this space is just going to become a bigger and bigger thing. It's not reducing. And I think human interaction in the old fashioned way, in inverted commas, is probably, it's never going to disappear, thankfully, but it seems to be diminishing, and online connection through a range of things seems to be increasing.
Yeah, look, I mean, we're working really hard to try and figure out ways. And today there was a think tank that came out and said that cybersecurity might be something that's solved in the next 10 years. I'd love to see that happen.
Yeah.
Through things like artificial intelligence. But unfortunately, I think humans are just so good at utilizing tech for good and then equally as good at utilizing tech for bad. So it's going to be an interesting 10 years for sure. Things to keep an eye on, absolutely. Machine learning, artificial intelligence, you know, getting the computer to a point where it knows who you are exactly. But then you get into this point where, okay, for the sake of cybersecurity, we want computers to be able to identify who we are so we can't, you know, have our identities used against us. But then you then get into this sort of privacy thing that, you know, people want to have their own privacy online. So how do you maintain privacy? Has that privacy shipped probably already sailed? I think it has. It really comes this war of, you know, what do we force on people? What do we allow? How hard do we make it to use technology? So we've been accused in the security industry. Everyone hates us for those bloody dongles that everyone's got to type in to access their bank, multi-factor yeah. authentication. You know, now they're going away with authenticator apps and biometrics and, you know, passwordless technology. But it's really a war of you know, how much we impinge on privacy to protect you. I mean, that age-old thing, you know, we want to stop terror attacks in our organization, sorry, in our countries. And to do that, we have to hand over all our information. And how much do we trust those people with information? It's really something I don't think we've solved yet as humanity, much less in tech. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting few years.
Can I ask you something that, thank you for that. Can I ask you something that's not strictly in your wheelhouse, but you're definitely going to know a lot more than me and the one-legged hopping bloody producer. Well, not one-legged, but the hopping producer. So you, firstly, did you watch, he's been on a couple of times, but have you seen Elon Musk on Rogan?
Yeah, I've watched Elon Musk a few times on Rogan, absolutely.
Yeah, of course you have. It's fucking like saying, did you get up and take a breath this morning? Of course you did. What are your thoughts? And this is just two blokes talking shit, because I'm interested, obviously, in the mind and the brain, and you're interested in tech and also the mind and the brain and human behavior. And I guess we're in and around the same space in that sense. So Elon Musk is building this thing, folks, called Neuralink. And correct the bits I get wrong, which could be numerous, Bastian, but so it's basically going to be a thing that's implanted under the skin, but outside the skull, the size of, I think, about like a quarter in America or a 10-cent piece here in Australia, about that thickness and that size, with electrodes, for want of a better word, or wires that go into the brain, for want of a better word, that can basically give us access to the internet. And also eventually he wants to be able for people to be able to download their consciousness. What is that possible? Is that even a thing?
I mean, yeah, I'm going way outside my field of expertise, but I hope one day it's possible to download our consciousness and expand humanity. I mean, the concerns there are obviously once you've digitized your consciousness, then it's very much prone to attack, although prone to attack how we are now, but maybe without so much detrimental effects. I mean, you can fundamentally change who someone is if you can hack their consciousness.
That's so fucking weird. And yeah, so Musk, I've heard him talk about a few times this symbiotic relationship between biology and technology, where technology and biology kind of come together, for want of a better term. Freaks me the fuck out. And I kind of think, I don't know, I don't think all technological advancement is necessarily advancement in terms of the human experience. I just wonder where we go, nah. You know, like I love the flaws in humans. I love the, you know, I think trying to eradicate any imperfection and, you know, it's, for me, it's kind of, that's what makes us human. And I think downloading consciousness is an interesting one. If somebody were to pass away and their physical body no longer exists, but their consciousness exists in something else, that.
Well, have you seen that's already a service that you can buy? So if you have someone that knows they're going to pass away you can start training a machine learning algorithm to become that person, learn their phrases, learn their mannerisms. And it's basically an app that that person has, the person who's going to pass away. And it's a series of decisions that they have in their real life. And it's constantly recording their voice whilst they use this application. And then after the person passes away, loved ones can use it to have a conversation postpartum, which is interesting. But yeah, I mean, I haven't thought enough about it to comment too much, but yeah, it's fascinating.
It is a fascinating thing. And what about, again, this is, I know this is not your wheelhouse specifically, but just for the conversation of it, because I'm, you know, I love cars, I'm into cars. And you know, when electric cars first came out, I was like, nah, fuck electric cars. I like noise and I like fumes and I like petrol and I like, you know, I like the visceral mechanical experience of being in. As I, not even as I get older, but just as I become more familiar with and accustomed to and thinking about, and you know, from an environmental point of view and all of that, I'm quite warming towards, and there's chance one of my next car, or maybe the one after, who knows, I'm bad with cars, I turn them over a fair bit, but in the not too distant future it might be electric. Can hackers hack a car? If somebody's driving a car, can it be hacked while they're driving? And if the answer is yes, which I think it is, because you just said it now, I'm definitely not getting one.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's, even if you stay with gasoline relics, you're still going to face cars today can be hacked. There's a group on Reddit that specialize in hacking the CAN bus systems of cars. Most modern cars made in the last, say 4 or 5 years, have an IP address. They have a connection. The BMW iDrive Connected, or whatever it's called, has been hacked already. Not hacked so much by malicious, but for malicious purposes, but hacked to improve the performance of a car, or hacked to get the connectivity of the car for free. So absolutely. And even like we're talking about Elon Musk before, the Tesla systems, they put a lot of thought and effort into these updates that go out to the car. So you buy the car and then it's continually updating. So you're essentially getting a new car and every software update that releases new features. There would be a bunch of people that are dedicated to hacking that system. And as far as I know, it hasn't been hacked yet, but it is pretty scary considering that these systems have control of a vehicle traveling down a road at 100 kilometers an hour. And those computers control the steering wheel, which could quite easily just hoik your car at 90 degrees into a wall. Yeah, it's really frightening stuff. My old BMW, we managed to hack it to the point where we could start the engine, we could apply the brakes, we could do a few bits and pieces. In fact, if you just Google or jump on YouTube car hacking, there's a few really scary tutorials where people use some 5G technology, or sorry, 4G technology back then, it might have been 3G even, to get into a BMW and release the brakes on the thing.
Speaking of, that is scary, way above my pay grade and my IQ, so I won't be watching that. Speaking of 5G, should we all be terrified?
No, you're experiencing more radiation when you turn on the light at your house from the globe than you would with 5G.
So what is the alleged, what is the cause of the hysteria? What are the alleged kind of issues?
If you follow all this 5G stuff back, and I'm no expert on this, by the way, but the American military were experimenting with using super, super powerful 5G radio, so basically 5G spectrum radio waves, to use it for crowd dispersal. So the idea was they had this big square thing on top of a tank and they'd gun everyone with 5G, and it wasn't even deemed to be dangerous then. They tested it on live soldiers. Not that the American military have the best track record of doing good things to their own soldiers, but they heated them up. They basically, the soldiers said it was like being in an oven. And now that is like, I think something like 50,000 orders of magnitude higher than the energy used from the 5G in our phones. 5G towers, safe. I wouldn't worry about it. There's a great guy actually, Veritasium, not affiliated with him at all, but on YouTube, Veritasium. And he goes into why the mobile phone band technologies, everything from 3G right up to 5G, just haven't caused an increase in our health concerns. And he explains that the, you know, turning on your light in your house causes you to be more irradiated than 5G. So you don't really have anything to concern yourself about there.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll get a 5G phone then. All right. So we better wind up, but I want to, so really fundamental question back to basics. So someone's listening to this and they're going to buy themselves a new laptop soon. They're going to go out to bloody JB Hi-Fi or wherever they go, the good guys, or wherever you suggest they go. And Brian from sales says, oh, you need this security thing and you need, what do we need? What do we, like if I'm buying a bog standard, you know, like whatever it is, whether it's $1,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 laptop, what, how do I take care, like from day one before I start using stuff, what should I do re-security?
I'd say number one, go to a site called Have I Been Pwned, PWNED.com. Make sure that the password you're currently using hasn't been involved in any breaches.
Okay, hang on. So Have I Been Pwned, P-A-W-N-E-D.
P-W-N-E-D.
Yep.
Use, like, Australians are very guilty of using their football team, their partner's name, their dog's name or whatever it is to make their passwords. And then they think it's secure because they add an exclamation mark at the end. That's probably not ideal. And I'd hate to think how many listeners right now are suddenly changing their exclamation mark to a dollar symbol. Still not ideal. But look, the passwords that you should be unique, and you can use things like password manager, like LastPass. So make sure that your password ecosystem, and a great example, this I've told this 1,000 times, but I should write more LinkedIn posts. And for a while there, my password was write space more space LinkedIn posts with some random numbers and letters. And then that was stored in a password manager. So that's an example of a fairly solid password that would take a while. Then once you go in and buy this phone, you'll buy it. And annoyingly, it'll tell you it needs an update. Update the thing. Those updates are usually security patches. And unfortunately, a lot of breaches we see are just phones that are old. And third thing, go and buy some software that's called Endpoint Detection and Response Software. It's kind of replaced antivirus. So that all the vendors do a reasonable job. So go and pick whichever one tickles your fancy. And those three things will probably stop your phone or whatever tech that you've got from a good proportion of the breaches. And the ones that are above on the, you need the breaches that are more complex than that, you need to go and talk to an organization like ours, CTRL Group. Or if you're a person, go and talk to someone like ID Care that can help you with tips on how to secure yourself.
Awesome. All right. So give us a plug, mate. What, tell us about your company. How can people, so it's called CTRL Group. How can people contact, if people own a business or a company and they want to talk to you about getting some help? How do they do that?
Absolutely. Jump onto our website, ctrlgroup.io. There's everything there from our phone number to a contact form. And look, cybersecurity, it sounds complex and hard, but our job is to take that away from you. Don't lump it on your IT guys. Let us take the heavy lifting. It's not as expensive as you think. And unfortunately in Australia, it's just a must have these days, because otherwise you will be the target of some of those overseas or criminal gangs that are targeting your business, your IP, your money. It may already be in your systems right now, which is the really scary thing, and you don't even know about it. And there's some pretty hectic fines going on now in terms of GDPR and Notify Breach Act compliance. So give us a call. We'll give you some knowledge and some IP, if nothing else, to help you get secured.
Awesome. And what's your podcast called?
Cyber Hacker on Podcast One or wherever you download your podcasts. Give that a listen too. It's lots of cool tips and tricks.
How on earth did you get that name?
That name, I believe Podcast One might have chosen that name after a quick conversation with me, but hey, we'll run with it. Cyber Hacker, why not?
How on earth was that not taken?
Yeah, good question. I don't know. I guess cyber's a fairly young industry, and yeah, we got one of the cool names.
Well, good for you, dude. Cyber Hacker is the name of Bastion's podcast. Take a listen. Mate, we really appreciate you chatting with us on the U Project, and you've enlightened me. And you know, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day.
Thank you very much, Craig. Thank you very much, Tiffany. Hope your foot gets better soon.
Thanks, boss.
Thanks, mate. Tiff, you stay on the call. Bastion, thanks, mate. We'll chat to you again.
Thanks very much, Craig. Absolute pleasure.
All right. Well, there we go, team. You've been informed, you know. Tiff, did you learn anything new or did you know all of that?
I learned heaps, but I learned heaps earlier this year when I spoke to Bastion on my podcast. So I did all my prepping after that.
Have you put anything in place since your conversation with him?
Absolutely. I use LastPass now. One of the things I mentioned to him is, or I asked him, because I send myself all of my passwords and logins on Messenger. So I know where to find them. He said emailing them is really bad, but Messenger is not as bad because it's an encrypted messaging service.
Somebody told me that WhatsApp is the go if you want to send stuff.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. I mean, that's what someone told me, that if you want to like send a message to someone that can't be, you know, that I don't know. What do I know? Stay on the call, Tiff. Anyway, thanks very much, folks. Hope you got something out of that. Love you guys. See you next time.